Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast, with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
You're back from the continent.
Buongiorno!
Buongiorno. Abasta Fazul. How was it?
It was fucking awesome.
How does it compare to the Bay Area?
It's kind of amazing how beautiful all of Italy seems to be.
That's how I feel about the Bay Area.
Yeah. I mean, well, many towns in the Bay Area are quite lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Quite lovely.
All of them. Each one more beautiful than the last.
Than the other. Yeah. I have taken some really gorgeous train rides,
actually. From El Cerrito.
I especially love
San Pablo.
The BART train ride. It really goes through some beautiful industrial areas.
Richmond.
Oakland.
To San Leandro.
Oh, you got a little song going on here.
Write a song about the Bay.
Can you write a song?
About the East
there Bay. Was that musical called Coma.
Point is, Maysoon, we got some feedback on our last episode. So you're back, so listeners should rest assured that Wofford didn't kill you.
Wofford didn't kill me.
Wofford was...
I don't think Wofford would kill me.
So we talked in that last episode about super longs, and we got a little bit of listener feedback, so I wanted to make sure that we address that.
Hey, did you have a super longs in Ohio? I don't think I don't think super longs is that like a West Coast thing?
Well, it wasn't, the super longs was just the colloquial name that people gave it, I think.
In
it
Ohio?
Wasn't actually, no, here, that longs is just a longs, officially, but people called it super longs because it was so big.
I see.
You don't remember this place?
No.
Because it was within your time of being in the Bay Area.
Where was it?
It was on Broadway. Anyhow, people, this was... folklore.
So that's why all the artists know about it.
Yeah, because it was sort of open
near,
all night.
And it was near CCA.
So. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
And Berkeley.
Sure.
And all that.
It was the East Bay spot.
Yeah. And we didn't have anything. We didn't have a long. Well, we didn't have longs, period, on the East in Ohio.
Yeah.
But we did have Meijer's, which is kind of like Walmart, like a superstore that was open 24 hours, where if you were a teenager, it was the only thing you could do.
Because we just hung out in the parking lot.
Rural farmland. We'd go inside and we'd get these stretchy lizard toys and shoot them into the ceiling until.
Inside the store.
Uh-huh,
until you
nobody
got
was
asleep.
There. There's like three employees there at like from midnight to like 5 a.m.
And they were probably doing the same thing.
And we would like try
sucks.
To. Bust open the paintball packages, and we were terrors. Anyhow,
that's
but
fun.
That was another one where they had everything you can imagine.
Wow.
This is from Sean. Super longs played a very important part in my fine arts education while at CCA Oakland. Many times that place saved my butt. At one point during an all-nighter, I decided that I needed a bunch of 10-foot bamboo poles for an installation piece for a 9 a.m. sculpture class. Luckily, super longs had a variety of diameters to choose
it's
from.
It's amazing.
And at a reasonable price. At 2 a.m., I picked up the poles and a bunch of killer snacks to get me through the night. I have a distinct memory of walking around the aisles with huge poles, knocking stuff over and cracking up. I aced that critique, too.
I know. He's great. I love that.
Good job,
it's
Sean.
So funny.
This person just said they had games and puzzles and plants and SSRIs and Raffaello's candy before you could find them anywhere else.
Wow.
Do you know that candy?
No, sure don't.
I want to get that candy. I always love
it. I kind of
candy.
Wish Sean sent us a picture of
his bamboo project.
His bamboo project.
Does everyone have to do a bamboo?
I don't know.
I did a bamboo and cork project in
you
undergrad
did?
Where we had to make a sculpture that also protected people from the rain. Anyhow, so while you were gone, I went out to the Minnesota Street Project finally.
But you didn't go to the opening.
No.
Were you one of those people who was waiting in line for so long that you just had to turn around and leave?
Mm-mm. I wouldn't even leave the house, much less wait in line. Not that it wasn't a worthwhile thing to be at, but seems fine. They got every kind of gallery.
There's like, I think there's something like 12 galleries there.
Yeah.
Or
and
nine.
It's a weird
9 to 12. It's sort
grouping.
Of incredible.
Because they got whoever, I forget what gallery it was, has like, the fucking driftwood horse woman.
Whoa, I don't know.
That sculptor that makes the horses, she's been doing it for like 100 years or some shit. Huh. Anyhow, they got that. Then they got Et Al down there. Their new Et Al, et cetera, which has like contemporary as fuck.
Yeah. And then there's Eleanor Harwood and Rena Branston.
Angham Gilbert's up there. And it's a very eclectic group.
Yeah.
I imagine that.
I think that must have been intentional.
Right. When they were trying picking to people, mix they were it like, up. Let's get one of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Let's get one of
Let's
everything.
Let's get two of everything.
What do they
and
have
then
to
after the flood, we can repopulate.
Oh, my God.
This is also something we haven't talked about on the podcast. They have an award now. Did we talk about this?
No.
Even just
I didn't even
in
know
private?
No.
They have a $10,000 individual artist award where the artist gets 10 grand and a studio for a year.
Wow.
It's like the Turnasol Award, sort of.
Part of me is just like, where is all the money coming from? I'm so curious.
Yeah, because the artists that just are regular studio people, how long did you say their lease was?
Yeah, I was talking to an artist who is one of the lucky artists to have gotten a studio, and she was saying that the leases are about, 10 to 15 years.
And
so
that
your
stays flat
your
rent that whole
is
time.
That means your rent is locked in for 10 to 15 years for the length of your lease, which is amazing. I mean, that is really, I think that's real sustainability for artists in the Bay
Area. That's incredible.
It's pretty incredible. And I think there's about 20 to 30 studios from what I could see.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool. And it's, you're there as long as you want to be there. So you don't, it's not like it's an award or something where you're there for
right,
3 years and you have to move on. Or you're only there for a term. You're there for as long as you want to be there.
Wow. Damn. Anyhow, Maysoon, another thing, another thought, a couple more reflections on the Minnesota Street Project. I liked having the MFA show there.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a good departure from the weird place they usually have it over at
CCA.
Well,
it sounds like it was actually an exhibition versus you have your work in your studio or basically just hanging in a space.
So that was good. Paulina Bursinski had some, I want to call it queer craft. I don't know if Paulina's coming at it from a queer perspective, but I'm deep into queer craft right now in anticipation of Julia Bryan Wilson's book, which comes out next year.
Hey, can you describe a little bit of the work
for
listeners?
It was kind of sloppy craft, like big giant fabric with other weird fabric sewn onto it. And then there was a little moment
sloppy
where there's
craft,
these
like
big,
it.
So they're big, like 10 by 6 feet or something.
And
I
they're
could
hanging,
be blowing
are they hanging
this
on
out
the wall
of proportion
or are they freestanding?
Because I'm not looking at a picture of it. But they're hanging on a wall.
Okay.
And they're, got little weird cutouts in them and other things like sewn onto them. But then there's a little moment where there's a little like fringe thing going off of one of them and then into a hole on the next one. And I was like, that's queer as fuck, whether you wanted it to be or not. Anyhow, so loved that. There was a show at Casamore Kirkaby Gallery where they had square monitors that videos are playing on. Have you ever seen a square monitor?
I have, but are they a cube or are they flat square?
They're flat screens.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
That are square.
That sounds nice.
And then the artist like built a thing around it, I think. But I was like, did the artist make these screens? Can you make flat screens in any shape now? And my mind was just like
blown.
Yes, I was like, could I make different shaped screens? Could I make pear shape, heart shape, star shaped screens? And then I went and asked
that's kinda cool.
The gallerist, and she was like, actually, they just make square ones now.
You're like, God
and I
damn
was like,
you.
Must be like an Instagram kind of response.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
But fine work there. There was also Lindsay White had a photograph in the back room that I very enjoyed. And anyhow, and then I went over to Et Al, etc., and sure enough, Aaron Harbor was gallery
Aaron
sitting
Harbor.
There. Kind of, bless his heart. It kind of made me wonder, like, if he writes a review of another gallery in that space that is not glowing.
Yeah.
Or in many cases on Curiously Direct, like, verbally violent. How's that gonna play out?
I wonder
out?
If he's gonna kind of, draw the line there or something. Like, I'm not, like, he
I
won't
can't do other ones
shows.
Here, but there's so many. Yeah, so that's interesting. I was interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little hard to talk to him because I have a picture that I painted of him going up in the auction at Southern Exposure.
Oh, really? Shut up. Really? Does he know that?
I don't know if he's listening.
Well, he's listening.
Now.
He's gonna find out. Ooh,
it's
that's
cute.
Great.
It's cute. It's just
did you
cute.
Did you work off of like a
just
an image in your
just
mind?
Just my memory. His
very
his
nice.
Visage is emblazoned for all time. in my memory.
Embossed in your brain.
Anyhow, that auction will be there.
It's on April 9th.
That's correct.
It's a Saturday.
Come on by. Only $8,000 for a ticket. JK, no. Members only like $40 or $50.
How much is the regular cost?
At the door, it's like $70.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah.
That's much higher than it has been.
Well, it's worth every penny for the children. Think of the children. I think that pretty much covers everything that happened while you were gone, Maysoon. You were sorely missed.
Aw.
So anyhow, speaking of CCA's MFA show, as we were 38 minutes ago, we got an interview this week with Glenn Helfin.
Yay.
Oakland, California, in the home of Glenn Helfand, critic, art writer, a writer of all types of genres, curator, educator, karaoke singer. I know I've asked you this before, but I think I once looked up the meaning of your last name.
You did?
And it has something to do with elephants.
I read that too once before, but I forgot. Maybe you remember more than me. Something about elephants, yeah.
And I brought it up to you after a lecture at SFAI once, and I think this could be way off, but I think you said that it was a Hebrew name. Is that right?
Well, my family's Jewish, like Eastern European, Russian, Polish Jews, so and I thought there were elephants there.
That's what you said. That's what you said last time.
I read that too. Maybe we need to look that up.
Well, how do you feel about elephants?
I like elephants. I'm fascinated by their skin. It seems kind of, you know, just to look at it, it looks very, it's got a lot of texture, kind of clay-like sculpture.
And they go in mud a lot, so then you get the added kind
right.
of.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
What do you think about elephants?
I love them. I love them, but they also make me sad.
I really like ivory. I like to.
Oh, God.
Has anybody ever talked about this mic that is very furry? It looks like a kind of animal as well.
We haven't discussed that part of it, really.
It's brand new because we got a grant and got some new recording equipment. So now we have this thing, which I think is a lot less intimidating to have in your face than our old thing, which was like a foam piece that I glued together with the glue gun.
I mean, it looks like a electric razor that's sprouting hair.
Oh.
Doesn't it?
People should
know that because they can't see this. So,
do you have any feelings that evokes?
I mean, it's it looks very soft. You want to touch it.
Glenn, do you primarily write about visual arts, or do you also write about? Do you ever write about like music or like the other sort of broader arts?
You wrote that great piece about going to the Russian River. You remember that?
Oh yeah, that was when I was doing stuff for Open Space and. Was writing about California. I like writing about California because I'm a native, mm-hmm. grew up in LA. And I like writing about film and, you know, want to sort of move into more personal essay kind of stuff. Because sometimes it seems like writing about art, it's hard to know what it actually does in the world sometimes.
Do you have an idea of what makes good art writing?
I mean, I think it's good writing, you know, when it's like rich and entertaining and sort of adds that something that really flows. I just picked up this book, which I just started, and I'm not into it too far, but Better Living Through Criticism, A.O. Scott's book, which is actually seeming kind of great. I mean, he's sort of arguing that criticism is its own art, you know, that all art is responsive and criticism is responsive. He did a talk with Grail Marcus at the Jewish Community Center, and it was just kind of nice to hear them. I liked it. I like A.O. Scott. I like smart film writing in a more general publication like the New York Times.
Also, you were one of my teachers in grad school.
That was fun. For me. I hope it was for you, too.
Super fun. I'd also like to take this time to formally apologize for all the times I signed up for a studio visit and then didn't show up.
Did you do that?
All the time. I'm glad you don't remember.
I was keeping tally, but I burned them at the beginning of the year.
Fantastic.
It was a ritual.
You taught us all how to write artist statements.
Right.
So you've been, do you do that all? So that was at Mills. You do that at CCA too?
Well, I'm not teaching at SFAI at the moment, though I have. Yeah, I mean, I think what I think that I am able to do, maybe you can say if that was, if I was a success at it, is to work with artists to be able to communicate about stuff, because I think that the world is hostile to it. And I do appreciate the artist's voice.
What are some sort of key guidelines, I guess, that you give your students when they're writing about their work?
Ground things in actualities, things that are, and not the audio actualities, but like, you know, something physical that we can point to, because people tend to just generalize and talk about concepts that you can't put your hands on or hold on to at all. You can't visualize. Mm-hmm. The myopia of feeling like, you know, of course you're in it so much that everybody knows what you're talking about.
Right.
Presuming that people, you know, the idea of writing to a relative that knows nothing about art, how would you talk about it?
I always thought you were very, you used kid gloves, because there were a lot of times in workshop where I thought people were being idiots. But you were very patient with them.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that.
Could you say what institution has the worst artist statements?
I'll be diplomatic and not go there.
Could you talk?
There are bad ones everywhere.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And there are good ones everywhere, too.
You also, do you do every year where you help curate the MFA show at CCA?
Well, so that's a good topic right now. We're in the midst of changing the MFA format there.
Oh, good.
The MFA show format. So this is the first year that it's going to be in the middle of the semester. It's going to be 4 exhibitions in 3 venues, including the new Minnesota Street Project. So we're part of the opening exhibitions there, which is really exciting, though also a little bit difficult because everything's new. We're also doing a show at Fused and at the Perry Family Event Center, which is adjacent to the Wattis. So there'll be shows of about, you know, there are 2 galleries that we're in at Minnesota Street. So 5 to 8 people in each exhibition. And the idea is really to give the artists much more of a rigorous critique. Their final reviews are happening in the shows. Versus at the end of the, I don't know if you got much feedback at Mills during your walkthrough at the end of that show. So we're going to actually critique the work in the middle of it. And the idea is to also make it a very professional experience. Rather than being in the school environment where you can get away with a lot of stuff, here it's going to be like we have to adhere to the rules of commercial or spaces that are functioning.
It seems like it would cut down, too, on all the, like, people getting all pissed off that, like, some piece nearby has sound and it's fucking me over and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that it really makes us have to address it more directly. It's happening sooner. People are just having to be more nimble. And I think they're rising to the challenge.
Because you work with so many students every year, is it ever hard to, like, stay engaged? I don't know.
Well, I think working with emerging artists or working with artists who are really trying to up their game is energizing. I mean, it's really about being around energy of shift and growth and also just being around a lot of creative energies. No, it's great. I do sense a little bit sometimes, and I don't know if it's generational. Actually, somebody was saying that, you know, the current generations of people might be a little bit less self-motivated based on kind of being, you know,
entitled
sort of issues. So sometimes
you feel that way.
I'm experiencing more artists who are really unsure about what they're doing, as though the education process is about us telling them how to do it, and I can't do that.
Yeah,
but that's not my job.
Fascinating.
Yeah, have you experienced any of that?
I feel like I am that person you're talking about.
Do you?
Kind of. I feel
you're pretty self-directed as an artist, though.
I think a lot of my practice was about like trying to get people to tell me what to do. Like I fucking sent Jerry Saltz a direct message on Instagram once asking what kind of art I should be making.
Yeah, but that's a very direct strategy. That's about looking at something very specific. I mean, you have pretty specific interests.
Thanks, Glenn.
Yeah, you know, and very clever ways of, you know, implementing them.
Bless. That's going to stay.
Kate was trying to get you to say that.
Just kidding.
I was feeling entitled to that, actually.
Okay, yes. You deserve it.
How long have you been in the Bay Area? Because you're from L.A.
I'm from L.A., but I moved here in the 80s, so it's been a long time. I actually thought I would leave, but I was working. Before I was teaching, I was doing a lot more work as a freelance writer, and it was actually around the time of the Mission School when it seemed, you know, that was a moment when it was like, do I go to New York now? And then it was like the first dot-com thing was happening, which was an incredible boon for writers because it was all about generating content. You got to do all these things where, you know, like writing book blurbs for, you know, database type things. Mm-hmm. And there were all these magazines about art and technology and these technology magazines where I would like little blurbs about websites that nobody had ever heard of before and stuff like that. I made a giant chunk of money writing, like going to luxury business things. I had to go to hotels and like rate the rooms. I got a free facial once, which was kind of amazing. But that kind of kept me around because I also thought this is a huge kind of cultural shift. It's a great place to be as a writer. I mean, this time around, it's become much more of a, like, writing has been devalued, I think, mm-hmm. which is makes it harder to kind of stay engaged with it. I mean, I think there's this sense that everybody can write. There's lots of venues. But at the same time, if you had done that professionally, the pay scale, like, just sort of took a dive.
Okay, Glenn, we're at your house, and you've got a lot of art up. There's a photograph here that's very striking. I can't stop looking at it. And it is do you want to describe it or talk about it?
It's a photograph by a guy named Pascal Shirley, who went to CCA a while ago. I think he's in L.A. now. And he was doing this whole series of meeting people on Craigslist and photographing them. So this is this one of a very depressed-looking woman sitting in a field. It's just sort of like Christina's world in some weird suburban field with houses in the background. She has really puffy eyes, forlorn stare, like chipped black nail polish. She's really sad, but kind of amazing. What do you think?
I just can't imagine eating breakfast like her.
Makes She's me feel like, happy.
Really I wanted to go back in time a little bit more about like San Francisco in the 80s and 90s, if you wanted. That's always an interesting time period to me.
Yeah, it is interesting. I wrote a piece for this catalog, Art AIDS America, which I had nothing to do with organizing the show. That one seems to have gotten a lot of flack for its kind of racial makeup. They asked me to write about San Francisco. That was the assignment. I'm like, what? What am I supposed to do with that? I ended up concentrating on a couple, like, spectrum of artists, of gay art, gay male artists, Nayland Blake and Jerome Chaya, I think is how you pronounce his name, as sort of, you know, intellectual and more kind of intuitive artists. And just thinking about the scene and activism and, you know, just a kind of sense of urgency that, if looking comparatively from then to now, and even sort of ending the piece that I wrote on Ringgold Alley, which was some kind of like gay cruising street, which is now abutting those gigantic condo buildings mm-hmm. on like 8th and between Folsom and Harrison. But it to me, like a lot of people, I don't know if it's lamenting, but just sort of, you know, that it is lamenting the loss of this kind of bohemian thing. You know, I was in the Mission today walking around and I still can't get over like some of those, you know, gleaming apartment and condo buildings on Mission and 14th or something. Mm-hmm. They just didn't seem like they don't belong there.
And you had to leave San Francisco.
I had to leave San Francisco.
But now you love Oakland.
Do you?
I'm not sure. There's a lot I love about Oakland. I still feel like I'm getting to know it. But it's nice to actually experience a city that's newer to me. And, you know, like gallery, I think one of my favorite galleries right now is City Limits, which is close to where we are right now.
Totally.
You know, it's nice to be able to walk to them and that there really is a scene. There's a big scene. Mm-hmm.
What? How do you do good curating?
Well, that's a loaded question. same as like that writing question. I mean, I think it's about, you know, making a vision kind of clear, making things greater than the sum of their parts in a lot of ways, or make you think about work in ways that spark new connections. I want to spend more time with I only had a quick hit of Larry Rinder's show at the Berkeley Art Museum, which seems like it's got that kind of, there's probably some amazing areas of things that resonate in really interesting ways, but I have to go back. Have you been to that?
I just was there today. Yeah.
What was your thought?
I don't know what I think anymore. I don't know what I think about anything anymore, about curating, about art, whether different art is good or bad.
What's that? So do you feel like you're too deep in it to see it? Is it what this, because I think is a pretty interesting topic. I mean, is art really mattering at the moment?
It's not that I don't feel not invested in art anymore. I think it's just every time I form an opinion about something, I go and talk to somebody about it and they change my mind.
Oh, well, that can happen.
What do you think makes...
adding in different perspectives, like if you look at it, you know, as we were, what were we talking about? Like the Art Aids America thing, and then, okay, if you look at it from a sort of angle of race, all of a sudden the thing kind of collapses, mm-hmm. potentially. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
I like things that I don't want to like.
That's a problem. Yeah. What do you do when that happens?
Just don't tell anyone.
All right, you have to reveal a secret. Is it like the kind of... what are they called? Just like something, a guilty pleasure sort of thing? Or is it something else?
Or also like something like at the new Berkeley Art Museum, there's a big Fred Sandbach piece, you know?
Oh, I didn't see that. Yeah.
It's easy to miss.
Yeah, true. It's just a piece of string.
Right. And like, I never would like that. Like, I don't really like minimal art, but I know it's like so important and everyone that I love loves it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, I wouldn't care about Fred Sandbach at all or even notice that it was there, except for that Andrea Fraser has this essay about Fred Sandbach that like made me like brought him into Technicolor, even mm-hmm. though his work is so nothing. So
did you like the piece?
Just because of that, though, because
like
now
you like it because you think you know that you should like it, or you think you should like it.
I like it because it takes me to this, like, to Andrea Fraser and her essay about it, and now I know his life and like his suicide and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but like aesthetically, I don't care about it. Mm-hmm. So, and I can just imagine that every other piece in there that I hate probably also has some amazing story or somebody who loves it who could convince
of course,
me otherwise.
Yeah, that's always the case.
So how do you know what's good and bad?
I know what I like. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's sort of assessing. I think it's really about a feeling a lot of the time. You know, something just works. Like you can just tell whether it's physically solid and conceptually solid. And when the two things come together, that's what works for me.
Do you have any mental health tips for artists or people in the art world?
Mental health tips. I think exercise and meditation. Exercise is, I think, key for clearing the mind. And I wish I meditated, but I don't. Or I try. I try hard, but it's still something I'd like to implement.
Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah.
I always also sleep. Like to add water.
Water, sleep. I mean, I think it's physical stuff. I've just been grounded. Right, and to kind of just not succumb to the difficulties of not, you know, feeling like your ideas aren't good or envy or all that kind of stuff.
Have you had artists where they had great success that you'd never expected, or vice versa, where you expected them to do really well and they didn't?
Yeah, both. Yeah, but I don't want to talk about the specifics.
Don't name names.
I won't name names. But yeah, of course, it is always that. Because I think, you know, you both know this in terms of being in the kind of bubble of any kind of school environment. If it's about the personality within the environment, or people can really flourish when they're being coddled in a certain way, where the attention's being paid. But when that stops, they fall flat. Who knows? I mean, it's just surprising. It is, and it's surprising who becomes a runaway success out of MFA programs. But it's always kind of nice to see.
Do you have any other tips for artists in general?
Do you feel like artists have more mental health issues?
Well, I think there have been articles about that. That's often the case. Mm-hmm.
Actually, dentists are the most at risk.
For what?
For mental health problems, like depression.
Dentists?
Dentists, psychologists, doctors.
Really? Dentists in particular.
Just they're in like the top five suicide rate of any profession.
For real?
Yeah.
That does seem like a pretty depressing job, like just looking at people's mouths. I mean, my dentist like just talks at me like,
you know, you can't
respond. Like for 20 minutes about flossing. I'm like, really? How do you find that much to say about it? And I can't, you know, tell you to stop. I mean, I think being a good person is the way to go with everything, and just ground yourself as much as possible. Yeah. Realize that things don't necessarily have to happen quickly. I think people really were increasingly expecting everything to, you know, snap and all of a sudden you're a success. Though I do find like doing in professional practice classes or talking to artists about what they expect, I think there is a lot of realism in terms of what people do expect and what, you know, a career will look like. I think the financial realities are probably a lot of the issues, right? Because you don't necessarily make a ton of money at it, and you may not have a show every year, or one year will be really great, and the next year maybe the work isn't, you know, resonating in the way it did the year before. It's a hard life. But we love it.
Fair enough. Glenn, thank you so much for having us in your lovely home, and of course, thank you for coming on the show.
Yes, thanks for inviting me. It's exciting.
And as always, congratulations. So May soon.
Yeah.
You are no longer working at the Mills College Art Museum. You had a heartwarming...
A heartwarming goodbye party.
Where you were given flowers.
Beautiful flowers.
I was hearing about this. Point is, May soon, you are now about to embark on a new job.
Yeah.
At the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art.
It's true. It is true.
I want to play a clip now of me talking about how... When they reopen, we are not going to be allowed to talk any shit about them because they'll come and get us.
Well,
and now
you'll
come and get me. Long story short, I just would hope that whenever the time comes for us to have to stand up in the face of fascism, that we would make the right choices.
I think we can.
And now we're obligated to, since we're on the record saying that we would.
We should. I mean, the whole point of this podcast is to
say
to be
fuck
on
you
it.
To everyone.
Not quite that.
What do you
but
think
not,
about
I
it?
I mean, we're not here to appease people. That's not what we're doing.
What are we here for?
I'm not sure what we're here for, but it's really not to make everyone, to say yes to everyone.
Right. You wouldn't bow down to SF MoMA's panoptical gaze.
I don't think I would bow down to it, no.
Okay. Panoptic? I think panoptic.
Panoptic, yeah.
Point is, Maysoon, I feel like it's easy to say this now, and I'm glad we got it on recording.
Okay.
So we will have to live up to it later, because
sure.
Everyone will know we said
but
this.
But we've already done this. You know what I mean?
Not like SF MoMA. Not like a big deal place.
I'm curious to see... Right. No, I hear you. I think I'm sure I would have more... stress about that situation than I'm showing right now.
Are we going to be able to do some
I'm not sure if
are
I'm going
to
be able to.
Are we going to have to bring in an outside source for me to really go deep with?
Maybe.
Wow.
Maybe.
Because you have to sign a thing.
I haven't signed anything yet. I did sign an
acceptance
letter.
I'm sure you'll have to sign a thing that says if you are approached by the press that you cannot talk in an official capacity about the museum.
Right.
So, what's going to happen, Mamie?
I don't know.
We'll see. Am I going to be able to say things like Charles Schwab is a fucking antichrist?
Yeah, come on. Anyone can say that.
Whoo! See if you can say that.
Why?
He's
on the
board.
Charles Schwab.
He's on the board. He's the president of the board.
God damn it. He's like, who is this new employee we
have
to kill? Is he the president of the board?
No, I don't know.
Come on.
He's on there, though, big time. Maysoon, I gotta say one more thing about the Minnesota Street Project. Okay. If you go the wrong way off the Muni train to get there, you end up at the Hells Angels headquarters.
Whoa.
It's right there.
I'm not, I would probably say try to avoid that.
I did. I got very upset. Kind of I was on the phone. I had a phone buddy, so it was fine. It did freak me out.
So they were gonna, in case you got sucked in, they knew where you were.
Freaky shit, there. Man.
I missed you while I was away, listeners.
Aww, and Kate. Listeners missed you too. And Kate missed you too. From the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been Congratulations Pine Tree.